Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to Podcart Podcasts, and my name's Helena Rafai. Occasionally, we bring in special guests to speak about the records that have soundtracked their lives so far. For rights reasons, music is shorter than the original song. This week's guest is Elizabeth Electra.
Hi, thank you so much for inviting me.
No, you're more than welcome. So, how are you, first of all? What's been happening?
I'm good, thanks. I'm really, I'm quite tired. I've had a lot on lately, but a lot of really good things, you know, I've been playing a lot and doing exciting good things. So it's like a good kind of tiredness.
So for people that, if it's their first time listening to this podcast, I ask guests to pick a selection of generally about six songs that have soundtracked their life so far. And it's really quite a tough task. As we spoke about before we started this podcast, about how many people you want to include, and it's just a nightmare.
It's been really hard. It was genuinely like, because it makes you realise actually how much, it made me realise how many songs have been so deeply meaningful to me. And, you know, I've made this selection, but there are people who are not on there who are probably some of my, you know, top favorite artists. And
yeah,
it's hard to do, but it's also a really lovely process because you get to kind of, you know, reacquaint yourself and think about, you know, songs in particular. And as a songwriter myself, you know, that's my biggest love, so I've really enjoyed the process.
What's your first musical memory?
You know, I have a really vague memory of being in the living room in my house when I was really small. It was before we moved to France, so I must have been like very, very small. I was too small, I think, to really be at school or anything. And I remember I used to play with a vinyl. And my mum and dad were both, my mum is really into classical music. That's pretty much all she listens to. My dad was into classical guitar music. So there was very little kind of pop music in the house. And I grew up listening to, like, you know, but I remember finding the small amount of vinyl in my parents' house and pulling it out and someone putting it on for me. And it was Jimi Hendrix. And I remember that. But I mean, probably even before that, I guess my earliest kind of memory would be my mum singing to me, which happened all the time.
And you've got quite a musical family, do you not?
Yeah, I do, yeah. Kind of all musical, actually, on both sides, on my mum and my dad's side. My mum's an incredible singer, opera, kind of, you know, amateur, but she's really good. My sister went to the conservatoire, in this Royal Scottish Conservatoire, to study classical voice. My brother's really musical. He's a graphic designer, but he makes music too, like techno. And most recently, like, weird remixes of 90s trance songs.
There's nothing wrong with that. I am loving that.
Yeah, and even my dad's side of the family is super musical. My cousins are singers, and my cousin Melissa sang with Danielle Dax in the Batcave, which is really cool.
I want to talk about the first song that you've selected. Am I right in saying Mylène Farmer?
Yeah.
Okay. Are you fluent in French?
I used to be. Yeah. I grew up there, and my French is good, but yeah, I wouldn't say I'm fluent anymore.
Yeah. why this song?
You know, this was one of the songs that there was never any doubt that I had to put it on this playlist for today, because it's just, it has stayed with me my whole life.
Hello. horloge, Dieu sinistre, effrayant, impassible, dont le doigt nous menace et nous dit souviens-toi. Les vibrantes douleurs dans ton cœur plein d'effroi se planteront bientôt comme dans une cible. Le plaisir vaporeux fuira vers l'horizon, ainsi qu'une sylphide au fond de la coulisse. Chaque instant te dévore un morceau du délice à chaque homme accordé.
I remember when I first heard it, and I was on this, like, when I was in France, I must have been about 8. And we went on this kind of 2-week thing with my school where we went all around Normandy doing a puppet show. And we would stay in kind of like youth hostely places. And we had some like youth workers working with us. And there was this woman and she was playing it and I loved it. And she gave me the tape. So I had the tape of this album, which is called Ainsi Sois-je by Mylene Farmer. And I just like really fell in love with it. I remember just listening to it on my headphones and I felt quite like socializing with big groups of people has never been my strong point. I'm always better one-on-one or in small groups. And so I remember during that time just being really happy that I could just listen to this record by myself over and over again. And it was just something I'd never heard. I'd never, you know, the whole album was just still, I still love it.
And was it the melodic side or was it the intimacy created or what was it? What do you feel that kind of you connected with?
I mean, I think she's a real character. She was the first person, I didn't know this until I was an adult, but she was the first person to ever have full frontal nudity in a music video, I think, ever. I could be wrong, but I know, yeah, that she was definitely the first person in France. And so for her song Libertine, just had all these nude women in it. Wow. And like I think there's something about her as a character because she's so unapologetic, but she's also, I mean, it's kind of this is one of the stranger songs on the album. The others are maybe a bit more straightforward, but everything is quite, you know, it's quite dreamy, it's quite theatrical, you know, it's a little bit other compared to maybe other albums even of hers. But this song is actually a poem by Charles Baudelaire sung over the music that she and her co-writer created.
And you obviously, some of the things that you've mentioned there about theatrics and, you know, character and so on, you are very much like that as well when you are performing. You've got a very, there's a strong visual element to you when you perform, and you have this great confidence when you're on stage as well. There's also particular styling. There's certain colours that you tend to kind of, you know, gravitate towards, and it's all very ethereal. So where do those aspects come from?
I think I've always been a drama queen. Like, I don't think there's been a time in my life where I haven't loved, it's not, you know, and I mean, when I say drama queen, I kind of mean like, I love the fantasy of it, you know, I love the escapism. And it's kind of a bit of a, it's strange because I'm quite shy and I actually get horrific stage fright. And I'm quite introverted, but then just performing is like in my veins, you know, and I don't know, it's just magic to me, like being able to create something else, something other, something new. I mean, nothing's really new, is it? But, you know, as far as I can in this world to create something visually that's transportative, that's really exciting for me.
And so you mentioned the stage fright there. What happens when you actually are within the, you are within the performance? Does that disappear or is it lingering in the back of your head? Or
it kind of disappears, but before I go on stage I will sometimes feel like I get such bad stage fright that I feel ill, like I feel like shaky. And then I get on stage and something happens and it's kind of like just everything comes alive. So yeah. And I'm sort of in the moment, and the more I can be in the moment, the better the show is, I think, for me. The more fun it is for me. I've been waiting for a guy to come and take me by the hand. Cozy sensations make me feel the pleasures of a normal man. New sensations barely in, so leave them for another day. I've got the spirit, music, feeling, take the shuffle away.
There's not much that you can... I don't think I've heard anyone speaking negatively about Joy Division in my life. I think it's safe to say.
You know, I don't know if I have either, and that's quite unusual, because usually people... Some people have some... I don't think I have either.
Yeah. So there's obviously quite a repertoire there, and, you know, you get a lot of people obviously geared towards Love Will Tear Us Apart, but what is it about Disorder that you love so much?
Just that first line. I mean, I love the whole song, but I think it's the most perfect opening line I can think of. I've been waiting for a guide to take me by the hand, to come and take me by the hand. Could these sensations make me feel the pleasures of a normal man? It's just unbelievable. And I think that's what makes me, that was the thing that first got me with Joy Division, was Ian Curtis's lyricism. You know, it's just something so profound there that's like, I feel like he expresses something that's almost inexpressible, that, you know, he kind of reaches right inside you and touches something like so deep that you may not even have been able to express it yourself. You know, it's just, that's how I feel about this song anyway, that it's like, it's really... It's kind of a strange, to me, it sort of feels like, and I mean, maybe this is because I know about his life, but it feels kind of like you're on the edge of the world, this song. You know, there's a sort of urgency, and there's something, you know, I really love it when something is so real and so raw and so vulnerable that it like strips away all the shit, all the bullshit. All the crap that everybody, all the, like, you know, the faces people wear and all the kind of things people put on, you know, all the fake stuff.
Yeah.
And then underneath it's just something really real and beautiful. And that's how I feel about this song. Like, it's just something so real and so beautiful and so timeless as well. Because it was so ahead of its time, this record. I mean, I think as musicians... They're really ahead of its time, but I think it still sounds amazing. Although my husband can't listen to it because he says there's a bass mistake in it. And I mean, I can hear what he's saying, but it's still, to me, the best song.
That makes no difference to me whatsoever.
You know, I kind of love that as well, because, like, what song now would have a bass mistake in it? It's really unlikely that would happen, because you'd just cut it out.
Yeah.
In Logic, and you'd like replace that bit.
I think there's something quite beautiful about that.
I think
there's
so too.
Mistake.
But I'd never felt like, as a listener, I'd never sort of listened to it and gone, oh, that's a mistake there. I just always thought that it was just part of the, you know, the musical journey, the bass journey.
Yeah.
In the song, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that's just where he was going.
So how old were you when you kind of got into Joy Division?
Actually, I was a bit older than probably other people. I probably found out about them when I was about 17 or 18. Because, I mean, Ian Curtis died before I was born. You know, there was, like, the stuff I was listening to in my teens wasn't really related. And I can't remember how I first heard about them. Like, I can't remember it. I can't really remember a time. Like, it's, you know, when something, you just find out about something and it becomes immediately like a part of you. That's kind of how this record was, how they were. I mean, I listened to everything that I could find, like, obsessively when I heard them.
And what were your teens like? What other musicians were you into? What was your lifestyle like as a teenager?
Well, to be honest, I didn't have a great time because my dad died when I was 11. So my teens were like just grief, you know. My mother is an amazing woman, but she would, I think, admit that she's not the most kind of emotional person. She, you know, kind of gets on with things. So I'm like the opposite of that. I'm extremely emotional and like I need to talk and process things. So I had quite a, you know, I had a fun time in my teens. Like I had lots of friends. We like had a lot of fun. But at the same time, I think there was this sadness that kind of like sort of floated over my teens that sort of influenced it. And musically, I think that was reflected in the stuff I was into, you know, like Joy Division and Portishead and Sonic Youth and, you know, who else? Like, even this, it's funny because there's even some songs that came out in my teens that are really happy songs that still somehow have this kind of melancholy attached to them. Like Outkast, Miss Jackson, for some reason, like, it's such a kind of happy song, but it has this real sort of energy for me of like sadness. And I think it's just because that's the lens through which I was looking at life.
Yeah. You know? Okay, so that's kind of really lifted the heart rate and the pace. it's quite different, I guess, from, well, I say that, and we've got Prince coming next, but you seem to have, I was just saying to you during the song there while it was playing, that there's a real 80s injection into what you seem to be into.
Yeah, I mean, I do tend to like music made in the 80s. But I mean, I like a lot of music not made in the 80s as well. It's interesting that I've chosen a lot of stuff that was recorded then. But this, I think, is a really special song to me because... So it's Sylvester is the singer and Patrick Cowley... wrote the song with him, and I think they're both really, to me, really important musical figures. And just Sylvester, he's like I mean, he was a gay man, a black gay man in the 80s and the late 70s, because he started his career in the late 70s, singing about what it felt like to have sex with other men whilst dressed in women's clothes. I mean, that's pretty fucking radical, yeah. You know? Like, I just think to live, to have... And also that falsetto voice, his voice, oh my God. He has one of my favourite voices because it's so distinctive and just the richness and the... There's just something so, you know, unapologetic again. Like, there's this feeling with him. Like, I would have loved to see him live. I've seen some videos on YouTube and he just... He was a real star, you know? And what I love is that I read this thing about him, and apparently he like really wanted to be on the radio. That was his ambition. He was like, I just want to be on the radio. I want to write songs that get on the radio. And I really like that energy of like, I want to make something and then I want people to hear it. Like, people can be quite shy about that, but I love that.
Yeah.
And this song's really meaningful for me because, you know, it was like soundtracked a particular time in my life when I was going out a lot and dancing a lot, but it sort of stayed with me as one of my favourite songs.
You're obviously a very, you're very passionate about being a woman and having an equality and also kind of making your mark as a woman in music as well. Who are some of the kind of women in music who have really inspired you?
I mean, there are so many. Bjork, Kate Bush, Tori Amos, more recently, like Lana Del Rey. You know, I like in my teens, I loved people like Jill Scott And Erica Badu, I still love Erica Badu. She's completely bonkers and I absolutely love it. Again, there's this kind of like, she just really doesn't give a fuck. And I appreciate that. And she's a phenomenal musician. I mean, there are so many. It's kind of almost like hard to think. I think that, you know, every time a woman goes out into the world and does what she wants to do on her terms, you know, something shifts energetically, and she gives permission to other women, to little girls, to people, anybody, to go and do that same thing. And that's what Sylvester did for me. And I think that is why I love his work so much. And, you know, the cool thing about this song as well is that he, like, disco up until that point had been very straight, pretty straight, you know, like. And it was kind of queered through the making. They made it faster. They made it kind of more like, you know, they made it for their scene, you know. And yeah, but I think in terms of women, it's hard to really sort of, I feel like I'm going to go home and be like, oh, I forgot to mention someone really important. Madonna.
Yeah.
You know, so many.
You see, like, so it's quite clear that the common thread now is that it's about individual characters and people that stand out for you, like you say, that don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
So it doesn't, it's not gender based at all. It's something, it's obviously just inspiration and whoever mm-hmm. it is. The next person that you've picked, an icon, I don't think I've quite seen the industry and fans and so on as devastated about someone passing than Prince. You've chosen I Would Die For You, which is one of the finest songs ever written. Who is Prince to you?
I mean, he really is my favourite artist, you know? And I'm not quite sure what that's about. Try to sort of analyse it. You know, there are so many people whose music I connect with. And interestingly, I love a lot of people who he really loved, like Joni Mitchell, Tori Amos, huge, massive influences on me, and people who I admire deeply. And but there's just something about Prince, I don't know what it is. Like, it's something intangible. That I feel I relate to him, to his music, to who he was. Just like, it's almost like the world doesn't make all that much sense to me, and then Prince makes complete sense. That's the only way I can describe it. Like, what he did, who he was with his work, you know, the image that he portrayed, the energy that he brought into the world, the songs, the music, all of it, just, it's like it slots into place for me. It makes sense, you know, whereas, like, I think I feel more of an affinity for his work. Not that my work is particularly like his, but just on a kind of energy level, I think, more than anyone else.
You are very much into the when you say about energy, the almost the spiritual side of those aspects, but you are very in tune with those aspects of astrology. Obviously, is a massive thing for you, and crystals. I know that you're very much into that, and obviously how things align, and your knowledge is just mind-blowing at times for me. And when it comes to Prince, does he come into that for you?
Well, Prince is an interesting one because Prince was religious, you know?
Yeah.
And, but I, yeah, so I am really interested in the esoteric. And I think that's been a part of me since I was a very small child. I remember my dad asking me, saying, like, do you want a book? There was this catalogue of books, you could pick one as well. We were living in France and we lived in the middle of nowhere. So that's how we would choose what books we were going to read. And I loved reading. And then he came home one day and he said, what do you want? And I said, I wanted a book about the pendulum. And I must have been like nine, you know, probably at the latest. And yeah, it's just always, those things have just always been a part of me. And then I discovered when I was a lot older that my dad's mum used a pendulum and that my dad's sister was, you know, interested in like mediumship. And I didn't know any of that stuff. And my mum is very much not into that stuff. So when I came out and told her I was a witch when I was 13, she spat her tea out laughing at me, which is, it was so funny. You know, she's like really not into that kind of thing. And I have always just had a huge interest in the esoteric and metaphysical things. I don't know, you know, I started reading the tarot when I was like 13, 14. It's just something I've always had an innate interest in. But, and I think that maybe all of that is kind of fundamentally about connecting to something bigger than myself.
Yeah.
You know, I don't believe in an interventionist God. Like, I don't believe in God, so to speak, you know. But that's not to say that I don't believe in some kind of something energetic that binds us all somehow, magically. You know, I do believe that we're all connected.
Yeah.
And I think that Prince, for me, actually, it's interesting you bring that up with this song, because, I mean, this song, you know, is a song about God. He's saying, like, it's a song written from the perspective of God to us, you know? And it's not a love song. It's, well, it is a love song, but I guess it's, like, the ultimate love song. In Prince's eyes, I'm sure that's what it was, you know? I think that also a thing I love about Prince is, like, he could marry that kind of that divine energy of his songs and those themes with like, yeah, I just really want to fuck you in other songs, you know. He was like so kind of physical and then so spiritual at the same time. And yeah, so I do think that comes in, and I think that I hear those themes in his music and I appreciate them.
When he passed, I mean, I'm guessing that it was really difficult for you.
It was really hard. It was really genuinely hard. I'm still really sad about it.
Yeah.
That sounds quite extreme. Like, I didn't think that the death of somebody I don't know would have that much of an impact on me, but it did. It kind of felt like, oh, you know, you were like one person who I really felt I could musically, in the music world, kind of really relate to. But obviously I never met him, so you don't know what a person's really like.
Yeah.
But my friend told me, we were on the phone chatting, my friend Jacob and I, and he was like, honey, are you sitting down? And I was like, yes. And he was like, there's been a report of a death at Paisley Park. And he said, but they haven't announced who it is. But I knew immediately, I knew it was him. But I mean, the fact that he died with this legacy, like so much amazing work, is just, that's such an inspiration to me to keep making work, whatever happens with it in the world, is just like the kind of dedication to your work as an artist. I think Prince really had that, and that's what he left us with. And, you know, I think it's devastating that he died young, and also it was so like avoidable because he was on pain medication for his hips, you know, and he didn't have an operation, and should have had an operation, but he died in a kind of such an avoidable way. But at the same time, how many people die and leave us that?
Yeah.
What he left us.
So Elizabeth, you've done the unthinkable and added another song. But let's talk about the first one. So Fever A, I'm a massive fan of The Knife, so I was really pleased when I saw Fever A on the list. Seven, What does this song mean to you?
You know, I love The Knife, but I'm not like a really deep fan. Like, I don't know everything of theirs. And then this record came out in 2009, and it kind of like, I think it's my favorite album of the last 10 years.
Wow.
It's just, and this song in particular I love because I think that Karen Dreja, I don't know if that's how you pronounce her name, but I think she has this gift with lyricism that's kind of like a merging of the mundane with the kind of transcendental, which I actually think a lot of my favourite lyricists have. Like, Prince definitely had that too. And, you know, Kate Bush and these people have this kind of, but I think she really, what I love is the sort of, it's like this, the lyrics are so poetic and so beautiful, but they're so, they're kind of sort of a beautiful everydayness at the same time. Like, and I think that's very Scandinavian. You know, there's this kind of, I did a module at university called Scandinavian Studies, looking at Scandinavian art and poetry and music and all of those things. And I realized just what an affinity I have with it, because it really does have, there's this kind of animism present in so much of it. And it's very kind of intuitive, there's this sort of intuition and this magic in it. This sort of like, yeah, there's something to me when I listen to this song that really evokes that magic, but kind of, you know, a magic based in this world, in our world. Actually, recently had one of those, like, for health reasons, had one of those DNA tests done, and I found out I have like a really big chunk of Scandinavian ancestry, which I didn't know about, because wow. I knew that we were French and I knew, you know, British, but I didn't know about the Scandinavian part, and that's like the third biggest chunk of my DNA. So I thought, well, it's like clearly in my veins, that kind of resonance with, you know, art and music that comes from that part of the world.
And you speak a lot about the connection and energy that you have with various musicians and music and so on. On the flip side, are there certain musicians or kind of almost auras that you get from people that you just think, I am just going to stay completely away from you?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Oh, for sure. I think everyone has that, right? Everybody, like, will sort of respond. I think we all respond to people, you know, quite, maybe not, but I feel like most people would sort of, you know, will get a kind of strong feeling of, like, whether something is for them or not. And, yeah, there's some stuff, like, there's some artists whose music I just really don't relate to and who, energetically, that doesn't sort of, you know, who they are and what they represent doesn't necessarily resonate with my values or what I think is important in the world. But, you know, I would never be like, oh, they shouldn't be doing it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, what they're doing clearly is right for somebody, like it resonates with someone else. So I think that's important. And also, people can change. And I think that's really, you know, like, if you look at what Axl Rose used to be like, the most horrific misogynist, and now he's kind of right on.
Yeah.
And then look at Morrissey. I
mean, he's an arsehole.
He's such an arsehole. To be fair, I don't know if I would have ever thought otherwise. Like, I don't think I would ever have thought of Morrissey and thought, he'd be a nice guy, I'd like to hang out with him. I would never have had that feeling about him. You know, I admire his lyricism hugely. I think he's a genius lyricist.
Yeah.
But I never felt... The interesting thing about him is that I don't think that, having listened to the Smiths or to his solo stuff, I don't feel like I ever really got to know him. Like, that vulnerability that I love and I, you know, that I feel is really there on, like, for instance, this song or pretty much everything that we've played so far, there's that sort of like, yeah, I don't really feel that with Morrissey. It's like there was this thing that he's hiding behind, this genius talent with words. But underneath it, he's clearly just a really bitter, twisted old man.
Yeah.
You know, and he's probably always been like that, you know.
You've kind of hinted at, and you've spoken a lot, this thing about people putting up barriers or faces, or, you know, almost kind of not really showing who they are. Mm-hmm. And you're a big fan of people who just don't give a fuck and they stay true to themselves. And the next artist, Robin, is that. She yes. does not give a shit, and she really is true to her art form. Mm-hmm. As well. Dancing on my own, which is a, like, I don't think there's, I think in my group of friends, which crosses over with yours, is that there's everyone loves this song.
It's just such a great song, you know? It's such a it's a perfect song. It's a perfect pop song.
Yeah, I know it's stupid, but just gotta see it for myself. I'm in the corner watching you kiss her. Oh, I'm right over here. Why can't you see me? Oh, I'm giving it my all, but I'm not the guy you're taking home. Ooh, I keep dancing on my own.
You know, it has, it's just, and I think that, yeah, like you're saying, she really doesn't give a fuck, and she's totally herself, and it's really obvious. And I love, you know, actually, I really love how sort of she doesn't kind of have any like airs, graces. There's not a whole lot of drama to her, you know, compared to like other people who, myself, you know. And I really love that about her. I love that, you know, when you see her on stage, she's just like herself, and she's just singing her songs, and she's really singing them, and she's such a good performer. And this to me is just, I really think it's a perfect pop song. The structure of it, and it's just, it's glorious. And I'm not so keen on the cover version of it personally, because I think that this is actually the definitive version.
Yeah.
But the fact that it could be covered by somebody else and taken into something so different, into such a different place musically, really shows what a great song it is, you know.
Yeah.
That it can have, I think that's when you really know if something's a great song, if you can take it out of the environment that exists within musically and take it and do something totally different with it, like play it just on the guitar, and then you know that you have something really special. And I think that's what I love about the song.
And your journey within music, obviously, we haven't even spoken about you releasing music, and obviously you've released new music. How's it been over the last while, going through that process, and also the industry changing quite a lot over the last, you know, 10, 20 years, and coming as a out as a almost new, with new music and trying to progress. How difficult has it been, or how inspiring has it been, or how's it been for you?
Well, I mean, as a contemporary artist, you can't look backwards. You have to work with what's happening now, and I really believe that, you know, I'm meant to be releasing music right now. Like, that's how it feels. Like, it's the right time for my work to be going into the world. I don't feel like, I don't wish that the industry were different. I think the idea of signing to a record label is fucking insane, because you're giving somebody, like, you know, however much, like half your master rights or whatever, you're signing away the rights to your music, your creation. You know, it doesn't make any sense to me. So the fact that whole structure of like labels and, you know, developing artists and sort of a traditional release thing with a record label, the fact that that's kind of done in many ways now is not a problem for me, because that means I'm in control.
Yeah.
And I really like to be in control.
Never.
I know, a Leo wanting to be in control of her own work. No, I like, it is hard. It's super hard. It's hard. You know, I have health issues that have totally, you know, that mean that sometimes I'm just like not well enough to do things. I have like chronic pain. I have a like, anyway, I have a condition that means that I don't, like the collagen production levels in my body aren't right. So I injure myself really easily and I get, and I've just been diagnosed with fibromyalgia too.
Oh, wow. That is so tough.
Yeah, but I mean, it's good to have a diagnosis after so many years of kind of wondering what on earth is wrong with me, because I'm, you know, young and you kind of feel like, well, wait, why is this happening? Is it? So it's good to know, but at the same time that, you know, that is a struggle. And I think that, but what I get from doing everything on my own is that kind of feeling of, I get a real feeling of achievement and satisfaction from it. And I get to keep my work for myself. I get to retain my rights.
And how do you define success for you?
Honestly, I define success as through the work I've created, like the volume of it and my perceived quality of the work that I've created is really important to me. So I write a lot of music. So I feel successful. You know, I feel like I'm really proud of myself for having worked so hard. can. So however that's like, you know, I've hardly released anything, so it's kind of bizarre to be in a position to have so of having so much music and then, you know, it not being in the world yet. But also it's a good position to be in, and I hope that, you know, I'm just excited to kind of keep releasing it. But yeah, I'm super excited about this album. You know, you mentioned earlier about the aesthetic world that it inhabits. And, you know, that's something that has emerged through, a lot of it's actually emerged through my own kind of tastes and the things that I'm into, but also then working with my friend Marina Feeney, who's a really dear friend of mine. We met on Instagram and then kind of stayed in touch, and then I went to see her in Paris, and then she came over to Scotland and we went and shot a video up in Skye, and we checked the weather and we were like, great, it's dry, but I forgot to look at the wind. It was like crazy winds, and so we were filming this video and all these kind of winds, and then there was this like hailstorm. It was really intense. And then earlier this year I went out to work with her in the desert, in Joshua Tree, where she lives.
Wow.
And so I went to Joshua Tree and it was snowing, like, I mean, like feet of snow, like up to my knees. And that had not happened for like 50 years or something. So I think Marina and I have some kind of weird meteorological magic when we get together. I'm going to see her again like this month. So who knows what? I hope there's not an earthquake. but Marina has really inspired me. And the work that we've done together, I feel like, has really shaped the aesthetic world that the album inhabits. And she is a really extraordinary person because she, you know, talking about people not giving a fuck.
Yeah.
She really doesn't. Like, we went up to the Highlands together and she was just, she's so colourful, and she was wearing her like onesie and her big, huge, like turquoise jacket. And, you know, people in the Highlands were just like, and she really didn't care. And she's such a singular person. And to have worked with an artist like that, I feel really lucky. You know, I really, really do, because she's very special.
And in terms of, have there been periods for you that you've had self-doubt about your, I mean, I know we've had conversations about it, but for the listener, in terms of your period of self-doubt, where does that come from and how does that manifest itself?
I mean, I think everybody has self-doubt. I don't think, I mean, maybe not. Maybe some people don't. I do.
Yeah.
And I think that actually what I think is that there's been a huge gap between me writing the songs I'm about to release and them being released. So I think that when you've sat with a piece of work or like pieces of work for a long time, you grow. I wrote these songs when I was a different person, like literally a different person from who I am today. You know, that I wrote them, like some of these songs I wrote 10, 11 years ago, some of them like 4 years ago, the most recent ones. So all of them were written when I was a different person. And sometimes I don't really want to release that person's music. I just want to be working on this person's music and I want to be releasing this person's music. But I have to honor the me I was when I wrote that work. And I have to honor this creation. And I think that probably the doubt, I mean, I think every artist will doubt themselves at some point, like, can I do this? Should I do this? Is it relevant? Is anyone going to care? But ultimately, it doesn't really matter if anyone cares, you know? Like, the world wants us to think that that matters, but it doesn't. Because for me, art, music, making things is about you. It's about who you are as an artist. It's about the process that you go through to bring something into the world, to birth something, and how that changes you fundamentally, and how that makes you grow, and how that kind of, yeah, that legacy that you can leave, even if you're not leaving it to anyone apart from, you know.
Did I dream you dreamed about me? Were you here when I was born?
Now my foolish boat is leaning, broken off long on your rock. For you sing, touch me not, touch me not, come back tomorrow.
So, Song to the Siren, This Mortal Coil, which is, it's probably one of the most emotional songs. And obviously, Tim Buckley had written the original and This Mortal Coil had reworked it. But I don't know if you agree. I think that's a far superior version to Mr. Buckley's, unfortunately.
I totally agree. And I don't know much Tim Buckley beyond this song. I listened to bits of it. It's nice, but this, yeah, I mean, I actually love his son. I love Jeff Buckley.
Yeah, Jeff's amazing.
Amazing. So, and again, super emotional, you know. But this, yeah, this to me, this version is just, I mean, Liz Fraser has some kind of deep magic in that voice of hers, you know. It's just so, it's very vulnerable.
Yeah.
It's a really vulnerable performance. And I think in that way, it kind of reminds me of Disorder, you know, thinking back to like that sort of same, this a really raw energy. You know, I did my dissertation at uni on The Voice.
Yeah.
And I looked at how, like, the thing that I think is extraordinary is that it's literally, it's the sound of your body and externalized. Your voice sounds the way that all the kind of folds of skin and the bones and the muscles and everything have shaped to create the sound of your voice. So when you're singing the sound of your body, and things like trauma and things like, you know, experiences that we have in our lives that are traumatic, research is coming out now that it changes your body. So I sort of feel like the voice is really a way to sort of like give the body a means to express itself. And I think through music, you know, that really, that can just be so powerful. And I just think this is such a beautiful, beautiful song and such a beautiful performance from Liz Fraser, who really is one of my favourite singers.
Yeah, it's the true kind of antithesis of an instrument. And she kind of channels, it's almost like Andalusian, the way that she sings. It's, I'm reminded of weirdly things like bagpipes.
Yeah. It's, and very
yeah, it's she really channels that in.
I think she's always used her voice like an instrument, actually. So it's really interesting you say that, because if you think about the Cocteau Twins, she kind of was so, I mean, her lyrics, you know. But even on sort of, even the first I heard of Liz Fraser was Teardrop by Massive Attack. And, you know, I was just obsessed with that song. And I remember getting really stoned when I was a teenager and suddenly hearing the words and being like, whoa, I know what she's saying.
Yeah. Because
up until then, it was just this like sound. And I think that's amazing that she, you know, there's this huge, like big popular song. And like,
yeah,
it was totally kind of, you know, her own, she has a really unique way of singing, I think, that I just love. I love This Mortal Coil. I love a lot of early 4AD music.
Yeah.
You know, and I actually worked with John Fryer, who is was in This Mortal Coil, on a song a while back. So that was really cool.
Well, I wish you the very best of luck, and thank you so much for speaking to me. And yeah, looking forward to the album.
Thank you so much, Alina. It's been a lot of fun.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.